You are listening to an InsightView.eu podcast. In recent weeks, there has been a panic among foreign investors in China after Beijing's campaign against domestic tech companies has spread from Alibaba to all tech companies, and subsequently to educational companies. Suddenly, China is seen in a different light, namely as a high-risk country. InsightView asks China expert Casper Wichmann whether China should now be seen in a different light.
Thanks, Casper, for taking time for this podcast. In the last few years, Xi Jinping has gained more and more power. Should the recent curtailment of the power of Chinese tech companies also be seen in that light, or has the president and the authorities a real regulatory case against tech companies?
I think overall seen, yeah, you can see it as another power struggle between the Communist Party and one of the bigger industries in China. But if you look into more details, there's obviously more to it, as with everything else in China. There's, of course, an issue of the tech giants have becoming very, very powerful within China and their role within the Chinese society and China's economy and also China's role abroad as well. They have become very powerful. And now we saw at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, the crackdown on Jack Ma personally and Ant Group. And now the time has come for the other tech giants to feel the hammer from the Communist Party as well. Of course, there's also elements of antitrust as well for the Communist Party, also not to make sure that these companies alone become way too powerful because they have so much data as well. So there's also an issue of data protection, both from the perspectives of the Chinese consumers and the Chinese citizens, but also because these companies have seen such heavy investment from foreign companies and especially U.S. companies that there might be a concern from members of the top of the Communist Party that this data would fall into the wrong hands, and that would very much be American hands due to a lot of the investment coming from the US. So I think there's more to it than just another power struggle between the party and the party center in Beijing and the rest of Chinese society.
Is it correct to say that the Chinese tech environment is more vulnerable compared to, for instance, in the United States?
To a degree, you could say that. I think they're equally vulnerable as well, depending on how secure and how well their cybersecurity is and how well their service with all this data is protected. Generally speaking, one of the advantages the Chinese has in the global tech competitive landscape, especially with the US, is that they have these vast amount of data just because the Chinese market is so big and there's so many Chinese users of all these different platforms. So, of course, it is in the interest and also in the national security interest of the Communist Party to make sure that all this data doesn't fall into the wrong hands so that they're not hacked by Americans and other foreign countries that might be interested in getting this data. So, of course, the Communist Party needs to have a very, very firm grip of what the tech companies are doing and getting access to this data. And they need easier access to do that than, for instance, the American government and CIA might have with the U.S. tech companies, Facebook, for example, and Google.
Is Xi Jinping's attack on the tech companies an indirect attack on internal power centers within the Communist Party, power centers that the president wants to eliminate?
That's, of course, always very difficult to fully know what kind of power struggles are going on within China, within the top, within the party. I mean, there's no doubt that Xi is still very, very strong within the Communist Party. There might be some adversaries within the tech giants. But historically, we've seen that the way that Xi Jinping deals with his political enemies is a lot more different than just going after the tech companies more regulatory. So I don't think there's that much like personal power struggles within the leaders. Of course, there's the signal to all of China and all of Chinese society, and especially the private industry and tech sector right now, that the Communist Party is the big boss of all this. And Xi is the big boss. I mean, you can't think that you're more powerful than Xi. And some analysts have said that that's why Jack Ma got taken down and had to lay low, because he went out and criticized all the financial regulations and things like that. So I think, again, when it comes to China, there's always much more than lies at the surface and what meets the eyes. But there might be some power struggles, but I think this is not the case with the tech companies.
Another angle to the authorities' attack on the tech sector is that Beijing attempts to reduce corporate power and rebalance the corporate sector's share of the economy in favor of labor. Do you share this interpretation?
I'm not fully in agreement with that, because I think that if you look at the Chinese economy, what have really carried and been the growth engine of the Chinese economy has, of course, been the infrastructure and been mainly migrant workers coming and building railroads, building the cities and building highways. But it's still, even with Corona and the hit that all the manufacturing sector got hit by the shutdown that followed the coronavirus outbreak, that they had to do more infrastructure projects as well to get the growth rates that they want. But I think that even the party as well knows, and which a lot of economists around the world are also saying, that this is not sustainable for Chinese economy, maybe not even in the short run, but definitely not in the long run. So he needs the tech sector, and he needs to have innovation within the Chinese society to continue to drive growth. So I think that he needs the private sector as well. And I think some of the criticism is that Xi is clamping down indirectly on innovation and growth as well by controlling the tech sector as well, and not really giving in to more freer market reforms as Deng, for example, did. But there's no doubt that he needs innovation and minds more than he needs hands and labor. So I think that it's always difficult to fully say that what is behind these crackdowns and what is the outcome that they want, the party wants in the long run. But I think that they want the tech sector still, also Ant Group and Tencent and Didi also, to play a big part of the Chinese economy. But there can be no doubt that Xi and the party wants to be in full control of what's happening, and also control the capital outflows, especially in and out of China within these tech giants as well. But there's no doubt that Xi also knows, and you can see how much he's betting on Made in China 2025 and his dual circulation strategy, that the new industrial era of China and innovation needs to and is a crucial part of the Chinese economic growth going forward.
A little bit in the same context. At first, many China experts believed that Xi Jinping was a political and economic reformer. However, the window of political reforms closed rather quickly. Lately, he also seems to disappoint when it comes to liberalizing the Chinese economy. Have Western experts completely misjudged Xi Jinping?
To a large extent, I would say yes. I would also add that it's very difficult to fully know what is Xi's overall strategy and where are the boundaries between Xi's personal ambitions and the ambitions of the Communist Party for China. And that's very difficult to fully know. I think that when Xi had just taken power, and a lot of people had hoped that he would follow more of the global agenda, also led by the US, and the complete opposite has happened, that of course China is still at least outwardly saying that they want a UN-based, rule-based society, not just one led by few nations such as the US or maybe the European Union. So, but I think they want to do it from a Chinese perspective, and they want to change the rules in the global society to have a more Chinese view on these things that can benefit the Chinese state. And I also think when it comes to political reforms, I think that ship has sailed, that we have seen that the main goal for Xi and the party is that the party survives and that the party is strong. And I mean, when Xi took over after the Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao administration, corruption was rampant. I mean, you had a very fragmented Chinese state as well. So Xi has really reeled in power back to the party. And now you see the separation between party and state that Deng had really put in place have been eroded now by Xi. So the party is very, very strong, which is also what we saw at the celebration of the 100 years of the party. That's a very, very strong party with Xi in the forefront of the party. I think if you look at economic reforms, I think that there is maybe a desire to do economic reforms, but I also think that there has been a lot of hiccups for Xi. Of course, the trade war with the US after Trump has meant that the playing field for economic reforms might not have been so easy for Xi. And now coronavirus as well, and the decoupling from the US. So there's a lot of uncertainties that might be a hindrance for Xi to really do economic reforms in China, even if he wanted to. And it's also, what is his strategy in the long run? I think that we're probably not going to see a liberalization of the Chinese market that some especially within the EU and the US might hope for. I think she's going to do what's best for the party and what's best for China. I mean, we did see with the comprehensive agreement on investment between China and EU that they were willing to open up a little bit for European companies and make a more equal playing field. But then we also saw that internal matters vis-a-vis Xinjiang mattered more than this agreement, since they were willing to bet that this might be shelved with the sanctions they made on the EU, which they were. So I think it's difficult to say. I think that she's tasked first and foremost is to secure the party, and he's still doing a very successful job in that. But he also has a lot of problems in China going forward, with especially the economy. So there will be reforms. There will be a need to reform the Chinese economy going forward. But he also has to struggle with a big state industry, especially the coal industry, steel industry, and some of these other industries within the state-owned enterprises that are very powerful. And I mean, times remain to be seen if she is powerful enough to really go head-to-head with these companies. But if they want to keep the Chinese economy going, they will have to do economic reforms at least. I think political reforms, I think that ship has sailed, at least for now.
The older generation of the Communist Party leaders chose Xi Jinping as the party leader because they thought that they could steer him in the right direction. They could not. Xi Jinping may not be the best educated of the party leaders, but he knows the game of power to perfection. This requires permanent repression of potential opposition within the party. Conversely, it also makes it difficult to reform the economy, as you just mentioned. If so, will this put a drag on Chinese entrepreneurship and economic growth in the future? How will the Chinese react to this, not least the centers of powers that still remains in China?
I think that many people underestimated Xi when he assumed power first, also because he was fairly unknown, I guess, and also the way that he took so much power within the party, the way he consolidated his power base within the party and in the military, and all the leading small groups took everyone by surprise, and I think not least his opponents within the party, and then of course also the anti-corruption campaign that really strengthened his position as well and helped him to weed out his political adversaries within the party as well, and that's still ongoing. So it's hard to see. I mean, for Xi to really be removed or to be kept in check, I think if you ask me, Xi is still a product of the party. So if he really messes up big time with the economy or Corona or vis-a-vis the US, then I think that his enemies would be more outspoken. We did see during the Corona that there was a lot of criticism of Xi, especially from within the academic world, but they were oppressed very quickly. So it's hard to see where the criticism should come from. So he's still very, very strong. I mean, as you also said, he knows how to play this game very, very well and to consolidate his power and also use his popularity with the Chinese population, use that to his advantages. I mean, he knows what Mao did and uses probably some of the same tools that Mao had in his toolbox for his own personal advantage and power position within the party. But again, the downside is that when you are so powerful, are you surrounded by just yes men who will not give you a straight answer to what might be best for China? So, I mean, if you have no opposition, is the same thing going to happen with Xi that might, and to some extent happen with Mao as well, that people are reporting wrong figures just to keep the leader happy? And also what they're doing also now that the curriculums in schools, they have to be taught Xi Jinping thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for the new era in schools. So ideology takes up a lot of space now also in the Chinese educational sector. And is that going to hinder innovation and free thinking to some extent, and then also hinder the future growth for China? Some criticism of Xi goes that the way that he's really controlling all aspects of Chinese society is in the end going to hinder himself and China and the party for reaching their goals and to also to escape the middle income trap.
China faces significant economic challenges, as you just mentioned, including demographic headwinds. At the same time, the younger part of the population does not want to run as fast as their parents. They want to enjoy life. Moreover, they do not want to have more than one child. This does not fit into Xi Jinping's narrative, which is based on old virtues. This, combined with the goal of eliminating internal opposition, means that Xi Jinping and the Communist Party are forced to tighten the grip on education and the media. The latter will also make it easier to deal with economic problems in the future. What kind of China are we going to see in the coming years?
A very difficult question, because it's always very difficult to really say what's going to happen with China, especially if you look at where China have come from and where China is today. I think we will see still a Xi Jinping who will continue as the paramount of the Communist Party, even after the Party Congress in autumn of 22. It's going to be interesting to see in the next Party Congress if there will be a successor to Xi being put in place to take over. And if we don't see that, then he will probably stay for at least another 10 years. I think there's little doubt that Xi is going to continue for at least 5 more years as the leader of the party and China. But then, of course, I mean, he's faced with numerous problems, just not inside of China, but also in the world, vis-a-vis the Sino-American relationship turning very, very sour rapidly. And still doing so. But again, as you mentioned, the demographic problems, now that the census was released this year, that shows that the working population is shrinking. Even though you have seen the one-child policy being turned into a two-child policy and now a three-child policy, that because of the economic barriers, especially because education for people in the bigger cities, housing and just the price of living and cost of living for Chinese is so high that even though they might want child number two, they just simply cannot afford it. And that's also a reason that the Chinese are not having more children. So that's a problem for Xi. And Xi and the party also knows that they need technology to counter this, robot technology, artificial intelligence. But they're also being squeezed by the U.S., and especially in the sector of semiconductors, where the U.S. have banned sales of semiconductors to China. And their own industry is not yet capable enough to produce semiconductors on their own. So that's a huge problem for the Chinese economy going forward. And as you say, for the younger generation, I mean, they have grown up in a China that has just continued to getting better and richer, also while being faced with an enormous pressure, both to do well in school and find a job, find a wife, get an apartment, get married, all of these socio-cultural pressure as well that they're under. So they're fed up with having to work 996 and are rebelling against that on the internet. And it's interesting because Mao actually said that young people should not work so much. I mean, they should be able to rest and rest their bodies as well. And I mean, maybe Xi will use this to his advantage as well and open up for saying, hey, we are reforming the tech industry now, so we are on the side of the people. I think one should also bear in mind that Xi, at least outwards to the Chinese population, at least the big middle class, is saying that we're, and here the party, and I am on your side. We're going to make China better for you. It's the China dream that we will have a prosperous society. But there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to China's economy. And I think one of the most interesting and also dangerous thing is that if the economy turns sour and people start losing their jobs, unemployment rises, who is going to be the big enemy of China? If unrest starts and people start complaining, is the Communist Party? And then even Xi himself, if he finds his position when the party being in jeopardy, how is he going to react? What is he going to do within the party? I mean, we saw what Mao did when his position was challenged and in jeopardy. What is Xi going to do? What is the party going to do? Also, keeping in mind the rising nationalism in China that we have seen in recent years, as well as the US and the West going to be an even bigger enemy. So see, okay, we might have a lot of internal problems. We're going to blame an enemy from outside to make it easier to put pressure away from our own failures. I mean, I think that's a risk that you have to keep in mind also, that could happen sooner rather than later when it comes to China, because there's a lot of uncertainties when it comes to the economy. But I think we are going to see a China that's going to continue as we've seen Xi has been doing for the almost last 10 years. They continue investing a lot in research and development and innovation. They're going to try to be as least dependable on the U.S. as possible when it comes to supply chain, and especially within the tech sector. And they're going to try to change the way that the world is has been put in place with the multilateral institution. They're going to try to say, hey, we're going to reshape that in the image of what China wants. We're going to collaborate more with Russia, especially when it comes to space and our space program with the lunar research stations and the Tiangong space station circulation Earth. So I think that China is going to, if they can keep the economy going, is trying to continue as they've been doing now.
Earlier this week, a Chinese state media called gaming for spiritual opium, which hits gaming stocks in the financial market this time. This raises the question, who are the next targets in President Xi Jinping's ongoing campaign? The president has previously said that housing is for living, not for speculation. Are the real estate tycoons next in line?
I think there's a very, very big chance that the real estate sector is one of the next areas being hit by Xi Jinping, also so he can appear to be on the side of the Chinese people. I mean, he said that housing are for living, not for profit. And again, it's also one of the areas where your average Chinese and the Chinese citizens find that the pressure is so big because they can't afford to live in the cities and find housing apartments. It takes up a huge chunk of their wages as well. So I think that might be where can Xi do his next move to appear powerful as well and strengthen his power within the Chinese people. I also think that the health sector will probably be one of them as well. And also to secure that the Chinese have access to healthcare as well without that being too expensive. I mean, it's a big problem that we can see in the US. I don't think Xi and the party wants China to go down that road because that's also a potential area of unrest. So I think, and also, I mean, if you look at Hong Kong and the unrest there with young people, it is that the upwards mobility for the young Hong Kong people are also part of the reason why they're rebelling against China as well. To some extent, of course, there's a lot, many other reasons to that. But I think that's also one of the reasons that might for young Chinese make them be unhappy with the way that things are in China, be unhappy with the way Xi and the party are ruling China. So I think that the party are very aware of that. I want to nip that in the bud before it becomes a problem. So I think the real estate sector will probably be one of them, and I think health sector as well.
In China, there's a strong demand for gaming and education. Is there a risk that an even larger black market for education and gaming will emerge if Beijing continues to intervene in these markets?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the Chinese are, if they are anything, they are pragmatic. So if there's a business opportunity, they will jump on it easily. But I think the Communist Party will also crack down on these black markets for education and gaming. And due to the increase in technology, I mean, they have a lot more tools to crack down on this. But I think that if people see a business opportunity, they will do that. And I mean, the demand is definitely there. And I mean, if you have your kid in school having to sit through Xi Jinping's thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for the new era rather than studying English or math or maybe programming or coding, I mean, then you probably want, when they come home, to give your child the best possibilities to advance in life later on. And being very well wanted within Xi Jinping thought might not be the best tool. So I think the Chinese is going to do what is best for them and their family, as they have always done. I mean, traditionally in Chinese throughout the history, I mean, the emperor says one thing and then the Chinese do what's best for them. I mean, you have the Chinese idiom that the mountains are high and the emperor is far away. But due to technology now, the emperor is very, very close by. I mean, he's on your phone. He's everywhere. I mean, and then again, we can discuss whether or not the emperor is Xi or the Communist Party in this regard. So I think that the party and Xi have easier tools to control many aspects of Chinese society and also thus the black markets for gaming education. But I think that is not going to stop entrepreneurial spirits in China to maybe make a profit for this vacuum that might arise from the crackdown on gaming and education.
Kasper, do you think Danish and European companies with significant exposure to China have a complete overview of the risks attached to China? Do European business leaders have reasons to worry about their future in China?
I hope that they're very, very well aware of all the risks that are in place when you're dealing with China, not just within the Chinese market itself, but also vis-a-vis the Sino-American relationship that also influences not just the mood in China, but also the EU and all the other playing fields in the world when it comes to business. And I mean, we have seen again and again how politics in China plays a huge role when it comes to businesses. I mean, we can see in Hong Kong, where even Chinese companies step on the wrong side of the party, and Xinjiang with the comprehensive agreement on investment, and Taiwan, at least, you see it again and again. So, I mean, it doesn't take a lot before areas that had not yet before been politicized becoming high and hot political topics for the Communist Party. So I think all companies who are dealing with China needs to be very well aware of the political development within China and also the development within the Sino-American relationship, and have plans and contingency plans in place of what are we going to do if this and this happen? How are we going to react if this and this? I mean, I think even something as simple as a very basic SWOT analysis might be the thing you need, but you need to constantly every day be aware of what's happening and how are you going to respond so you can see the development that might take place, because it can happen from one day to the next. I mean, you never know what the party is going to do. And of course, keep updated on the plans for Xi and his ambitions for the party. So I think any company would do very well to follow politics more closely. And in the EU, there was talk that, or hope that you might be able to separate politics and geopolitics and business. But with China, you cannot do that, especially not with the way the party is right now, where party ideology is really seething into all aspects of Chinese society. And also for companies, I mean, foreign companies need to have a party cell as well. So you need to know your allies and hopefully help with them. Because again, Chinese are pragmatic, even though that everyone in China right now are having to swear allegiance to the party. I mean, they are pragmatic, so if you can help them help you, then you might find a win-win. But for all companies, please do be aware of the political development in China.
I often ask Europeans directly or indirectly exposed to China whether we have been too naive in our relationship with China. What is your take?
I think that we have been too naive, and we have not met China with demands that should have been met. I mean, we should say that there's the same requirements and demands for Chinese companies or investment going into Europe as they are for European or Western companies going into China. I mean, why should that be any different? I mean, there has to be a level playing field, probably also because that there has been turned a blind eye into what China was probably going to become. I don't think anyone had foreseen 20 years ago what China would have become today, especially not with Xi Jinping. So I think that it has been an issue where profit has triumphed over anything else. So I think right now also that, especially because the whole situation with the West and the US versus China is becoming more and more sour, that I think we underestimated China. But I think that we see a shift in that now also with the EU labeling China as a strategic rivalry. And also with Biden and the Biden administration continuing where Trump left on China and saying, okay, we're going to compete with China where we compete and collaborate where we can collaborate. But the areas of collaborations for the US, at least, are shrinking rapidly. It's almost only now down to climate issues. And even that is difficult. So, I mean, the EU needs to find areas where we can collaborate, and climate policies are one of them. And then, I mean, for businesses as well, they need to find out, is the Chinese market for us? I mean, do we have the resources to invest what it takes to be in China, both to keep up with the political environment, also the pressure that we might have from our other markets and home markets in the West that we are in China? Because, I mean, the media in the West is also very biased when it comes to China, and not always in a very good way, that paints China in a very unnuanced picture. That's not necessarily the whole story about China. But I think that, yeah, we need to wake up to the realities when it comes to China. I think one step to do that is to acknowledge that we know very little when it comes to China, and we know very little about the party, and maybe invest some resources into becoming more knowledgeable about China so we can adapt our strategies to that.
Thank you, Kasper Wigman, for taking part in this podcast.
My pleasure.